You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Good afternoon. This is the WFHB local news for Monday, December 14th, 2020. In today's program, we present two news features. The first of which provides a timeline of the dismantling of the homeless encampment at Seminary Park. Then we have the latest edition of A Few Minutes with the Mayor, coming up later in the program. First, we turn to a WFHB news special report on the dismantling of the homeless encampment at Seminary Park last week. On Friday, over 100 people gathered at the Monroe County Courthouse for a protest titled Hands Off the Homeless, an Immediate End to the War on Unhoused Camps. The protest came after the Bloomington Police Department dismantled a homeless encampment at Seminary Park last Wednesday. Mia Beach and Hugh Farrell, producers of KiteLine, talked to two participants of the protest on Zoom, both local advocates for people experiencing homelessness. The sources said they wanted to remain anonymous.
I am a resident of Monroe County. I've been going to Seminary Park to do outreach. My wife, Jen, and I both, just as citizens concerned, we were on the city council call where they voted to not kick the residents out. And we were there the very next morning after the police had raided the camp.
I'm a Monroe County resident who interacts with people experiencing homelessness in Monroe County and was made aware of a plan by the county or Parks and Rec building to let the homeless people stay in the encampment that they'd made at Seminary Park due to what's going on with the COVID pandemic. I then was made aware that there was a loophole in what they had said to allow them to tear it down, and had both several firsthand accounts and accounts from some of the security personnel to explain that atrocity.
My wife, Jen, and I started to gather some supplies together and go down to Seminary Park just to reach out to the residents down there and get to know them. Befriend them and try to get them supplies. While we were there, we were made aware of a woman who has HIV and hepatitis C. It was freezing cold. A man came up and begged me to help her. So I went up and talked to her and promised I would help her. Handed out some supplies, left. Came back the next day, couldn't find her. Handed out more supplies. But each time I would go down there, I would learn of disabled people there that literally could walk. There's one lady that needed a wheelchair, so on and so forth. Not a good situation for a lot of people. And then we heard they were going to be voting on tearing it down. So we sat in on the city council call, and every single person that spoke was against it. Every comment, every public comment, people were just like, you should be ashamed of yourself for what you're even considering right now. This is horrible. Just laying it out for them. So wake up the next morning and there's a Facebook post. They voted no, and it wasn't from them. It was from someone we knew. And then the very next thing we heard was the cops raided Seminary last night and tore everything down. And I specifically remember in my comment during the city council meeting telling them, if you do this, there are going to be people, disabled people, literally crawling down the street that have nowhere to go. It's 30 degrees out and we're in the middle of a pandemic. They were told every scenario that might happen. And what really angers me is when Jen and I we were running around town trying to gather supplies. First thing we saw was a little local newspaper at Rural King. You open it up, county votes no, let them stay. Front page of the Herald Times, county votes no. And they were just putting on this show like, county says no. And I'm sorry, I'm from Bloomington. It's a small enough town that I have a hard time believing that
when they voted to let them stay, that they had no knowledge that was going to happen anyway. I don't believe that. I honestly feel like because it's a global pandemic and it completely goes against CDC guidelines on how to handle encampments, it almost seems like criminal to me, like they should be held accountable for what they did. But ever since then, Jen and I started a fundraiser. It kind of just went viral. Hundreds of people have shared it. It's almost up to like $4,000. And we've been buying a lot of supplies and taking it down to people who have lost all their things. And we would like to raise enough money, you know, to actually make an impact and help people get in somewhere, maybe, you know, on a more permanent basis, or if anything, give them what they need right now instead of sending them to an agency so they can go through all the paperwork to get help in 3 months. You know, yeah, it doesn't do any good in situations like this. But yeah, I cannot believe that the city of Bloomington let that happen during a global pandemic. And we're supposed to be this progressive, you know, college town, and we're acting the exact opposite.
At the beginning of the week, I'd heard rustle and bustle from big happenings in Seminary Park. And I have a friend who works with the homeless rather closely, and it explained, another homeless man that's a dear friend of ours, that it explained to me that they were going to let everybody stay in Seminary Park. We are experiencing a COVID pandemic. I thought it was unlikely that the mayor and his government would allow them to remove them. When I found out that they had voted to keep them, I awoke the next day and to a text message from a friend of mine whose son was one of the non-police personnel who'd removed some of the stuff from there against his better judgment, said it was one of the worst things he'd ever experienced. And then I read the papers afterwards, and I read that they had found hundreds of needles laying there. We know that there has never been a community found needle stick that led to HCV or HCV ever. And the idea that they created a aura of fear and panic around needles laying there only serves a tired rhetoric that has kept that a felony. And I think that most of those were found in sealed packages, and I doubt that they were just laying there. On top of that, the idea that they are not following CDC guidelines or following their own best practices is just an abomination. I think that Mayor Hamilton has chose to give in to fear-mongering. All that set aside, the biggest problem I have with this is that I cannot believe that they didn't know about it as well. That makes me just absolutely insanely scared for the place that I live in. To place a vote, then that either means one, and then the next morning have them remove the encampment means either that one piece of the government doesn't know what the other is doing, or that, I mean, either they're that dumb and they don't, one hand doesn't know what the other is doing, or they strictly don't care and they're doing backroom politics. I don't know them personally, so I don't know which one it was. But I would hope that I don't live in a place where my government doesn't know, my local government doesn't know what one hand washes the other. On top of that, it's just basic care. You know, you can't leave people. They said there was a bus that bused people out of there. Well, from the people I talked to, it was pretty much get on the bus or freeze. You know, use Gestapo tactics like this in a small town, word's going to get around. And pretty much throughout the week, I've just witnessed the entirety of what I thought was a nice, progressive, wonderful community being led by someone who obviously gives into fear and panic before thinking evidence-based practices through.
Last Tuesday, WFHB correspondent Aaron Comforti interviewed Trevor Richardson, a representative of the homeless community affiliated with the Bloomington Homeless Coalition. The interview happened ahead of the Board of Park Commissioners meeting, where the board voted down an amendment which would have banned tents in city parks during daytime hours. However, tents are already banned in city parks during nighttime hours from 11 p.m. to 5 a.m. On Tuesday, due to technical difficulties on a tight deadline, Aaron Comforti's interview was cut short. Today, we revisit that interview in full.
Trevor Richardson is a representative of the community, a people experiencing homelessness here in Bloomington. Thanks so much for coming on to WFHB to talk about this policy.
Not a problem.
As you know, Bloomington Parks and Recreation Department is proposing the implementation of this special use policy, which basically says no tents, no other makeshift structures on parks. And the background that they gave was that, you know, these spaces should be enjoyed by the whole community, and people putting up tents stops that from happening. How would you respond to that characterization of this policy? And what do you think is really the main issue here?
I would respond to that in a couple of different ways. First off, just because a person is homeless doesn't mean that they are not a part of the community, that they aren't human, that they don't have the same rights to enjoy public space or the same basic rights to survive. The idea that the homeless are a threat to the public safety or keep people from being able to enjoy everyday life is ridiculous, to be honest. I mean, the majority, I mean, sure, you have bad apples, you have bad situations that happen, but the majority of any serious crime, anything that's not a nuisance, does not come from the homeless population.
The Board of Parks and Rec, they didn't explicitly mention homelessness in the background of this policy, which would ban tents in parks. Are they, though? Is that what they're talking about here?
Yes. I mean, it's a systematic thing. Obviously, you can't go out of your way to say that you're discriminating against the homeless without rubbing people the wrong way. But who else, especially on a consistent basis, is going to go and pitch a tent in the park? You know, it's you know, you're not going to get somebody that lives in the gated community to come pitch a tent in the park. You're going to get people that have nowhere else to go and need to survive in sub-zero weather that do that.
Right. You bring up an important part of this, which is the timing. And it's cold. It's winter, basically, now. It's a pandemic. This policy is, I mean, some activists have characterized it as a de facto eviction of people experiencing homelessness from parks. How do you respond to that characterization of this, and what do you think about the timing?
I relate it to the oppression of, like, the Native American people. I relate it to the types of tactics and policies used to constantly relocate and disenfranchise those people until they had nothing left and weren't on land that was cherished by their rich and the wealthy, or, you know, they weren't in the public sight and weren't, you know, they weren't eyesores to the community.
There is a history to kind of regulating space that you're drawing on and pointing to, that this is a part of a history. It's also a part of a big picture today. This is obviously not just a, you know, Board of Park Commissioners issue. This is a city issue, and much broader than that.
If I may, real quick, I had something, you know, I did a little bit of research and I had something I wanted to share with you. It is my opinion, and I'm under the impression that city parks are public parks. They're public property. Okay.
Okay.
And so there is a United States Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit ruled in a case involving Idaho that it is cruel and unusual punishment to criminalize the simple act of sleeping outside on public property when no alternative adequate shelter exists.
That ruling and that decision, that judgment, certainly seems to have some relevance in this case. And I thank you for bringing it up. And thank you so much for talking with us at WFHB about this policy to ban tents in city public parks. I really hope we can stay in touch and speak about this stuff in the future.
Absolutely. I mean, and the bottom line is, just because a person is without a house does not mean that they are not, you know, they're not citizens, they're not people. You know, they have to survive somehow. And you can't criminalize or ban, you know, and take away resources from the people that struggle to survive the way that, the things are. You're right. This is a pandemic. This is the dead of winter, when people, people die every year because they have nowhere to go.
Yes, it is very difficult times in that way. And again, thank you so much, Trevor, for taking the time to talk with us. I've got to leave it there just for the sake of timing on this report, but thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for reaching out to me.
Absolutely.
On Thursday, December 10th, correspondent Jake Jacobson reported on the dismantling of the homeless encampment at Seminary Park.
Last night, members of the Bloomington Police Department dismantled an encampment at Seminary Park downtown. The camp served as a means of shelter for Bloomington residents who are experiencing homelessness. According to a report by The Bloomingtonian, police showed up at around 10 p.m. and let people staying in the camp know that they had to leave the park by 11 p.m., just an hour later. This sweep happens less than 2 days after the city's Board of Parks commissioners voted 1-3 against a proposed ban on tents and similar structures during daytime hours in city parks. Camping structures and makeshift structures are currently banned without a permit overnight, between the hours of 11 p.m. to 5 a.m. Breaking up these encampments can be dangerous for many reasons. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, set national guidelines for homeless encampments during the COVID-19 pandemic. In these guidelines, the CDC recommends allowing encampments to stay where they are. According to the CDC guidelines, clearing these camps, as the BPD did Wednesday night, can, quote, cause people to disperse throughout the community and break connections with service providers. This increases the potential for infectious disease spread, end quote. According to posts on the Bloomington Homeless Coalition's Facebook page, items from the camp are being held at the Bloomington Parks Operations Building at 545 South Adams Street. Volunteers are picking up as many items as they can and taking them to the Shalom Center to be redistributed. WFHB reached out to the Bloomington Parks and Recreation's office for confirmation, but were redirected to the office of the mayor, who were unavailable to take our call.
Hugh Farrell then spoke with the anonymous sources about the Hands Off the Homeless protest on Friday, December 11th.
Would either of you just sort of describe what happened at the demonstration tonight?
So yeah, the protest tonight had a really good turnout, in my opinion. There was over 100 people there, I'm sure, well over. The most powerful thing that happened was when Harry spoke, he's the remaining homeless coalition, Bloomington Homeless Coalition member who's still experiencing homelessness. And he got up and spoke, and he really drove the point home that they're people. These are people, they're good people, they're nice, they're lovable. And I think he had a big impact on the crowd, honestly. It's not too often that at a rally like that or anything, you have someone like Harry able to get up there and really express what it's like and what it's he's been homeless off and on his entire life. You know, he's got huge barriers keeping him from getting into whatever housing is being offered to him by agencies. That I believe that had the most impact tonight.
Watching the demonstration tonight was nice. Having directly impacted people be the predominant speakers was a lot different than having a whole bunch of people who do not experience the issues centered in a demonstration. The allies tended to let the people who truly were affected by these issues steal the show, as Harry Collins did. It was nice that for once, we got to hear the voices that truly mattered rather than the people backing the voices that mattered. It was a good turnout. It was a crisp night. And the people that are usually loud tended to be quiet.
One of the most profound and impactful things, in my opinion, that Harry said when he was talking was he challenged the mayor, all the city council members, the park department, chief of police. He challenged them publicly to try being homeless for a week, come and join him for a week. And when they come, bring only what they have and less than $100 so that they can experience what it's like to not be know where you're going to get your next meal at, not know if you're going to be dry for the day, you know, what it's like to wear the same clothes for a week. None of them know that. I think, you know, for people in those positions to make decisions like they do from the comfort of Zoom from their own home, and everyone kind of knows that's what is happening. For Harry to challenge them like that was brilliant. And I think it's something that actually it needs to be considered. Like I would love to see the public pressure them to do that, because I think it would completely change how they view the situation, how they handle it.
Community members posted questions on our social media via Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, posing questions to Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton about current issues. Today, on A Few Minutes with the Mayor, John Hamilton answers these questions. The first question that I have today is, what is the average deaths per day due to COVID-19 in Monroe County?
Yes, the average deaths per day in Monroe County are now at 2. That's the first time it's been that way since the start of the pandemic.
Will the city be regulating what people can do and where they can go to celebrate their winter holidays in order to keep COVID-19 cases down?
Well, there are regulations both at the state and county and city levels that do govern some of our behavior, including things like gathering sizes, private and social gatherings, how restaurants have to function, including the mask mandate that we have here. More and more, we are learning that it's individual behavior that also is a real driver in the spread of the disease. And it's possible there would be a stay-at-home order, either at the state level or local level. It's difficult to know. We're trying to base all of this on science and what the health experts and the pandemic experience have told us. And most of what it seems to be telling us is you've just got to be very careful and wear a mask and stay 6 feet apart and don't interact more than you absolutely have to with people who are not in your household. So,
and when will Monroe County see the first distribution of COVID-19 vaccinations?
We're told by the IU Health System, which is the first location for them to be received, that they expect to start delivering vaccinations, shots, early next week, I believe, about 21st. There may be some earlier than that, but certainly in the next days ahead, we expect to see primarily healthcare workers, direct healthcare workers, and residents of long-term care facilities to begin to get those shots.
And are there plans to, and is the city prepared to distribute the vaccinations through pop-up clinics and volunteer workers?
I do encourage anyone who can help to reach out to the health department to volunteer, because there's a lot of need for logistical help. This is really driven by the healthcare system. These vaccines, as many people know, need to be very cold. They're stored and delivered in very highly regulated and regimented ways. Some of them, storage times are limited. Deliveries need to be highly regulated and monitored. So I have to say, I think much of this is happening through national logistics, state logistics, even involving military, National Guard, et cetera. We've had one vaccine officially approved. We expect a second any day. There may be a third and a fourth and even more. So we're ready to help, but most of this will be centered in the public health system and distribution mechanism.
Mm-hmm. So will most of them be given at hospitals and local medical sites, or are there also plans to set up local pop-up vaccination hubs? Or,
well, as I understand it, yes, the very beginning will be typically in hospital settings, particularly with healthcare workers. I expect there will be some delivered to long-term care facilities that will have a regimen to actually do inoculations to the residents there. We do expect over time that places like the CVS or other clinics that do flu shots, pharmacies, et cetera, will likely be able to provide the vaccine as well. That timing is unclear. There will probably also be some pop-up type clinics or mobile clinics that will help deliver the vaccination to places that are hard to get to or populations that are hard to get into other facilities.
Vice President Mike Pence is rumored to visit our local branch of Catalent tomorrow. Why is this visit planned for, Mr. Vice President?
Well, you'll have to ask Vice President Pence his own choices of where he goes, when, and why. I can assume that there's an appeal in going to a facility like Catalent, which is running 24/7 to help package, reproduce, and distribute vaccinations. As I understand, under contract with at least two of the vaccine regimes to package them, separate them into individual vials, and store them, and then distribute them. So I will say we're really proud to have Catalent here as part of the incredible scientific health system effort to research them, develop them, and then distribute them. And it's exciting to have the Catalent plant here right in the middle of that package of all the people doing great work.
Moving on from COVID-19, who was responsible for sending out the orders to remove the homeless camp from Seminary Park on December 9th?
Well, we have had long engagement with people who are experiencing homelessness. COVID year has been hard for most of us in lots of different ways. It's been especially hard for people who are losing jobs or suffering from homelessness or mental illness, substance use disorder, on top of all the other challenges of COVID. So we've been working very closely with folks in our community, trying to help people get access to health care, to housing, to food as needed, and we'll continue to do that. And we do have regulations that do not allow people to sleep overnight in city parks or public rights of way. And that's been a longstanding regulation ordinance in the city. And we continue to work with people to try to make sure there are options for where to stay. And the decision last week to say you can't sleep in the park was not a new decision, because people have been steered away from the park as needed, offered different options as they were that night. What was different was there had been a gradually growing practice of leaving a lot of material and tents and such overnight in a park, unoccupied but left in the park. There had been a really growing number of problems with needles that were left in the park, sometimes hundreds at a time, very dangerous to other people. And so working with folks in the park that evening, they were told, you can't leave the things overnight in the parks that you've been leaving in the parks. And we offered to transport either people or things to different places.
So did that removal, did it spur from like the parks department or the police officers or the mayor's office? Do you know where that action originated from?
Well, the decision on Wednesday the 9th to decide we will not allow the continuing buildup of tents and tarp items to remain in the park came from a number of city departments who've had to deal with that. And I approved it as the mayor. I needed to approve it, and I'll stand responsible for that decision. It is really important for folks to know that there have not been people sleeping in the parks generally overnight. Parks are closed between 11 p.m. and 5 a.m. and sleeping is not allowed in any of the 30 plus city parks. And that's been consistent. It's also important to know there are something like 50 empty beds in emergency shelters that are available to people who need to get out from the weather, and including beds that are focused on isolating those who are at risk of exposure or have been exposed to COVID, as well as traditional emergency shelter beds. So we will continue to try to help people identify and connect with any resources that they need. That night, for example, there were four people who asked to be transported, connected with overnight shelter, and that was done. But the vast majority of people who are using our parks, and everyone is welcome to use parks during the day, are going to their homes or places of shelter at night, which is the safer place to be.
And the last question that I have on this is, why was this action taken against CDC recommendations and the outspoken public opposition to the removal?
Well, CDC recommendations do not generally say people should be living outdoors during the pandemic. That's been a misinformation and misapprehension. There is some CDC language that says if there is an encampment where people are living, sleeping, and living, and there is no alternative residential option for folks, it may be the wiser course not to break up such a living encampment and spread people out to different places. That was not the case in Bloomington either, that it was a living encampment. There were not people generally sleeping overnight and living there, nor are we lacking places, indoor places where people can go. So the CDC guidelines have been really important to the community to help us manage the public health threat. We've created alternative places for people to stay. And so I think the public involvement did want to continue to allow tents and structures during the day in the parks. That was the question at the Parks Board, was should we continue to allow basically tents and gatherings of belongings and such in parks during the day. And the Parks Board voted not to change the rule to keep allowing that. So we do keep allowing that. And this community absolutely steps up to try to help all of us who are dealing with all of these issues to have as good an opportunity to deal with them as we can. I'm really pleased that the collaborations among the nonprofit providers are doing Herculean efforts to try to improve things. And that's critically important. We'll continue to do do that. It's that kind of collaboration that led to millions of dollars of investments in the last 9 months. So we'll continue to work on that because the challenges remain for all of us.
Do you have a question for Mayor John Hamilton? Comment that question on this coming week's post for a few minutes with the mayor to have your question answered. For WFHB, I'm Sydney Foreman.